All right, today is the 30th day of the 11th month. It is a Sabbath New Moon Bible study. So yesterday we had a Sabbath also. My voice wasn't quite up to recording anything yet, as you may be able to hear for those listening on the audio internet ministry. I have a little bit of a cold the last few weeks, so my voice wasn't good enough to read out louds, and I've also been away doing some things, so between the two it just wasn't easy to have the last 2 weeks Bible studies to be recorded. So I apologize for that for anybody who is appreciating the service, and I'll try to do my best here today. So, as I said, today is the 30th day of the 11th month. Tomorrow will be the first day of the 12th month. We'll have another Bible study tomorrow that will be recorded. And we will also be observing this month for us the Feast of Esther, or what is known as Purim, out of the Persian wording for the same festival, which can be found in the book of Esther. And I would strongly encourage anybody who is interested in the reason why the Feast of Purim or the Feast of Esther is important to go back and listen to the posts I put up full moon that helped explain some of that, because I couldn't speak. I put an old message up that I had recorded many years ago on this subject, and I think you'll find it intriguing, some of the connections between the two. But today we are going to continue in our Sabbath Bible study, which is just simply a reading through the scriptures of Joshua, is where we are at right now. I'm going to read 14, and we are going to skip 15, 16, and 17, I've decided, not to catch up for prior weeks lost, but because it is tribal inheritance very specifically. And I don't know how much you need me to read and explain. If there's anything that is wanted to be explained that I might be able to help you with, you could feel free to write me or call me, or however that relationship goes that I might have with you or someone else, and I will try to do that. So, Joshua 14. These are the countries which the children of Israel inherited in the land of Canaan, which Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun, the heads of the fathers of the tribes of the children of Israel, distributed for inheritance to them. By lot was their inheritance, as Yahweh commanded by the hand of Moses, for the 9 tribes and for the half-tribe Manasseh. For Moses had given the inheritance of 2 tribes and a half-tribe on the other side Jordan, but unto the Levites he gave none inheritance among them. Okay, so we're going to just recap briefly on what we read a few weeks back on the 8th day of the same month. And what we can see, or what we can understand, is that once the first few cities and areas were conquered from the Canaanites, in whichever particular branch that was there of the Canaanites, that Moses commanded the people, Joshua being his fill-in, or his appointee for his position, helped the people do this, and it was done by lot. Okay, there's a lot to be said, pun intended, a lot to be said about lots. There are times in life and national life when we do not know what the will of God is, or do not know the best way to go about things, or don't want to cause problems. So, when I say problems, I mean one with another, like one opinion overrides the other, or something of that nature. And a lot is a determination made by God. The book of Proverbs tells us the lot is in the lap, referring to the lap of a man or a woman, but the whole disposing thereof is of Yahweh. Okay, so we know that Yahweh chooses the lot as a way to understand what His will is in certain situations where we may not know the best answer. And in this case, the lot was used to divide the lands among the children of Israel, with the exception of the Levites, who Yahweh was given as their inheritance, because they were the ministers. They were going to live in wherever the place Yahweh eventually chose. They were going to take care of the tabernacle, and they were also going to live in the cities, which are known as the cities of refuge from God's law. The cities of refuge were places of judgment where the people would come for judgment, and they were the joining places, seemingly, of the tribal lands, the place in between. This is very resembling of what was done in most Germanic countries in Europe, in times recorded, where we have record of how the Danes, the Germans, the Scandinavians, the English even, the Saxons, had areas where the people would commonly come, whether it was a place where a well was, which was common, a place where they would grind grain called the millstone, which is why the Bible talks about not removing the upper or nether millstone of an area that was put there in ancient times. The law forbids a person to move those areas. Why? Because God decided them by lot according to his determination when the land was divided. Now, given the land of Europe, the lands of Europe and the lands of England and places in that continent where Israel went after there, they may have used the same way to divide the land, but it is not the land of Israel. That is granted. However, the determination that made these this area and that area was not allowed to be moved. So in this part of Joshua, what we see here is a division of tribal inheritance, and it is done by the lot. Someone may come up with multiple different ways to use a lot for determining things. In this case here, however, the lot was used, and I think a good congress, so to speak, of people, a group of elders, could come together and redetermine the most biblical way for a person to cast a lot and divide a country and give it by an inheritance. In this case, when it was divided among the tribes, it was not to ever change from one tribe to the other. So that's very important to remember from prior reading, as well as from God's law, as well as Joshua 14 here, as we get into this a little bit further, because it is a foundational point of biblical inheritance that is commonly forgotten in Bible reading groups. And the reason it is because there are so many ideas of spiritual Israel, spiritual acceptance of other peoples and cultures and ways into Israel right now, that we are being asked to believe that Israel was a multicultural, multiracial, multiethnic group that had tolerance or had the ability to just absorb the non-Israelite or Hebrew peoples into it and somehow distribute an inheritance to those people by taking it from a tribe. Okay, now what I want to mention on that is an impossibility as far as biblical real estate or real property, which would probably be the better term, is referred to. And I'm just going to take this time right now to explain some of this from a biblical standpoint before we go on any further into Joshua on biblical inheritance. When a man has a son, biblically, when a biblical Israelite man has a son, his firstborn gets what's called the double portion of the inheritance. Okay? And the double portion of the inheritance doesn't necessarily mean it was completely doubled more than everybody else, but it was a greater, a multiplied portion, which may be a better translation of the word, multiplied portion unto that firstborn son. However, a son such as Reuben, who had done an act that was abominable in the sight of his father, or bothersome to his father, or disrespectful, dishonoring, would be able to take that away and redistribute that inheritance to the better son, or sons in the case of Jacob. So, in the case of tribal inheritance, you actually have 12 tribes, really 13, once you divide Joseph into two. And you count Levi as the 13th, since he has no inheritance. It's easy to look at it that way. And from that point of view, the land is divided into 12ths. And as it is divided into 12ths, that land is given to the sons of that father of the 12. Okay, we have 12 tribes with 12 different names, and those names are Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Issachar, Gad, Asher, Naphtali, Zebulun, Joseph, Benjamin, you know, and so on. Those men were men. They were literally descended from the loins of Jacob, Israel. Okay? They were his children, his flesh, his blood, whatever words, his genetics, whatever you want to use to describe them. They were the 12 sons of one man and four women. Okay? There were four different wives that Jacob had to have these women. And tribal inheritance falls, number one, as I just said, by male descent. Okay, Israelite law, determined by Yahweh God, dictates to us that men give to their sons an inheritance. Now, daughters can receive inheritance. This can be seen at the very end of the book of Numbers. Okay, and at the very end of the book of Numbers, as discussed in many Bible studies prior, but not any that have been recorded, I don't believe so. The daughters of a man named Zelophehad, who was a man of Joseph, he had a question about tribal inheritance. Okay, and his question was that he had no sons, he had only daughters. If those daughters married to another tribe and they received the inheritance, then the tribal inheritance lines would become distorted. In other words, that woman would take her inheritance with her, marry a man from, let's say, Reuben, while she's from Joseph, and all of a sudden, some of Joseph's land has now been transferred to Reuben because the law that dictates inheritance normally in Israel will take over after that point, and then the man will give the daughter's inheritance that she brought with her from Joseph's land to his sons, which is will be considered a Reubenite. Therefore, that land would become part of the tribe of Reuben, and it would confuse and distort tribal inheritance. So, Yahweh told Moses that, this is great, you guys are thinking about my law. He was happy that the men were considering these things ahead of time. And what Yahweh tells Moses is that the only time a woman is able to have the inheritance of the land or from a tribe, from her tribal inheritance, is if she marries someone within her father's tribe. In other words, a woman from the tribe of Manasseh or Ephraim must marry a man from the tribe of Ephraim or Manasseh in order to keep her tribal inheritance intact. If not, it reverts back to her father's kinsman. So, maybe a brother, maybe a cousin, maybe an uncle, whatever, but it will go back into male descent. It'll go backwards in through his line, and they will find the next near of kin, the kinsman, to redeem that piece of land. Okay? So this is very important information, because this is how God looks at inheritance. This is how God understands the way it should work, and he gives to us. When I say understands, he understands it like a foundation. He holds it up. This is the way he would want us to think about it. Now, given we may be able to explore the meanings of these words and stuff and come up with a deeper understanding of them, but in a nutshell, this is it. Now, what that does is not only does it limit females from being able, women, from being able to inherit, I'm just talking about land, national land, and swap it to another tribe. It also tells us that God's law was so strict on the subject of this that he would not permit, okay, he would not permit a stranger, that is someone who is not of one of the 12 tribes, to come into a tribal inheritance and just be given a piece of land, and then he could give it to his children as if he were one of the 12 tribes, Ephraim, Manasseh, Judah, whatever. So, what that means is you cannot be a stranger in Israel and become a national. You cannot become as if you were homeborn in inheritance. Now, the Bible is very clear. It says there shall be one law for the stranger, and there shall be one law for him that is homeborn or native, depending on your translation. Okay? And the reason why it says that is because when we're dealing in a case of law, in a case of festival keeping, sacrifice, whatever, what God requires of the people is that they do it as a nation. Something we got a big problem with right now. And in the event we do it as a nation, we must enforce the laws on the stranger in our land as he were homeborn. We don't treat him like he's homeborn and say, here, have everything we can have, like the United States and Europe is doing to the hordes that are coming in of non-related peoples and destroying not only the genetic fiber of the people through racial adultery, but also by displacing the inheritance to strangers, which will eventually take over. Now, given it's a curse in our situation, okay? It is a curse in our tribal situation because we have not delineated lands into tribal inheritance according to Scripture. We have not looked at our countries, our nations, as if they are our land. Our blood of our forefathers won them through war. That's the truth of the matter. Or they took them by adventure. Okay, in the same way the children of Israel did to the land of Canaan because Yahweh told them to, in Europe and in the United States, I don't care what your political correct understanding is, men of the West came into those countries, conquered those countries, whether you think it was deceitful, whether you don't like the idea that Indians were taken out of the United States, whether you don't like the idea that some possible pre-inhabitants to Europe may have been there, whether they were or weren't, I don't know. But whoever was there before, they were displaced, okay, by the sons of Israel. And because of that, that land is theirs to take. All right? They won the war, just like any creature in nature, when he goes into a territory and takes it, okay, he holds it. He holds it by war. Well, right now, the people of Israel, of Europe, the European Israelites of the modern day, who used to hold, their fathers held the Christian Bible in their hand as if it were their inheritance, are being displaced out of their land by punishment because they did not link themselves to the land according to these laws. Okay? Which we can see just from the beginning of looking at Joshua. That this inheritance was an important part of who Israel was to be. And I'm going to show you as we get into this reading of Joshua that there is some admonitions given between Joshua and Caleb that would go very well for modern day Europe and America if we would just consider what it is that has happened in other places in the world as well as in our ancient history contained in our inherited book, the Bible, which is, by the way, part of our inheritance. Okay? So, what did I just discuss in a nutshell? Briefly, that inheritance is given by male descent from father to son. It can be given to females so long as they marry someone within their father's tribe. And strangers have no inheritance in Israel as it pertains to land inheritance, law inheritance, and multiple things. However, they must be treated with equity as if they were homeborn when it comes to judgment and whenever it comes to dealings of national practice. Okay? So, in a nutshell, that's what we're talking about here. And we're going to get back into Joshua now that we have considered some of that, and I probably should have gave that little speech last time on the 8th day Bible study when we first started getting into this part, and that would be the 11th month, 8th day if you want to go back and check the archives. Okay, But Joshua is going to go in now in 14:4, and he says, "For the children of Joseph were two tribes. They were Manasseh and Ephraim. Therefore they gave no part unto the Levites in the land, save cities to dwell in, with their suburbs for their cattle and for their substance." Okay, so once again, as we just described, the children of Joseph were two tribes. If you remember, Jacob split Joseph into Ephraim and Manasseh and gave them a blessing by crossing his arms while he prayed over them or blessed them, however that went. And the way Joshua is looking at this in this book, or the book of Joshua is explaining it to us, is they are looking at it as if the Levites were taken out of the picture and either Ephraim or Manasseh was put in their place. Okay, but he goes to explain, like we just discussed, that the cities to dwell in were given to the Levites. Okay, so they had places to live. Joshua 14:5 says, "As Yahweh commanded Moses, so the children of Israel did, and they divided the land. Then the children of Judah came unto Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said unto him, Thou knowest the thing that Yahweh said to me, or said unto Moses, the man of God, concerning me and thee in Kadesh Barnea. 40 years old was I when Moses, the servant of Yahweh, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to espy out the land, and I brought him word again, as it was in mine heart. Nevertheless, my brethren that went up with me made the heart of the people melt, but I wholly followed Yahweh my God. And Moses sware on that day, saying, Surely the land whereon thy feet have trodden shall be thine inheritance, and thy children's forever, because thou hast wholly followed Yahweh my God. And now, behold, Yahweh has kept me alive, and he said, These 45 years, so we know it's been 5 years since the conquest started, since they left, crossed the Jordan. Even since Yahweh spake this word unto Moses while the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness. And now, lo, I am this day 85. Okay? 80 is 2, 4, 6, 8, and 5. So, just for old English, might not be used to it. 85 years old. As yet I am as strong this day as I was in the day that Moses sent me. As my strength was then, even so is my strength now for war, both to go out and to come in. Now therefore give me this mountain whereof Yahweh spake in that day, for thou heardest in that day how the Anakim were there, and that the cities were great and fenced. If so be Yahweh will be with me, then I shall be able to drive them out as Yahweh said." Joshua blessed him and gave unto Caleb the son of Jephunneh Hebron for an inheritance. Okay, so in Hebron, prior, 45 years prior, Moses told Caleb that because he was willing, Caleb and Joshua were the only two willing to conquer the land. They wanted to do it. The spies' hearts melted and they said, "We can't do it. These guys are too big. We're like grasshoppers. They're giants. They're going to destroy us," so on and so forth. And they decided they didn't want to fight against the Canaanites that inhabited the land. Therefore, God took the time period away from them, but he told Joshua and Caleb that they were going to have certain portions. So while the lot fell out to the tribes, Caleb approaches Joshua after that, and Caleb is a Judahite, okay, as I recall, who is part of the Kenizzites, which is a branch of Judah, one of his sons or great grandsons rather, and he says that this place called Hebron is mine because God told me I could have it, and if I am allowed to go into that mountain and destroy the inhabitants, if I can take it by force, and that will prove Yahweh is with me, let me go and take it, because that's the land he said. Okay, so what it could mean, and this is a matter of biblical geography, whether or not this is how it went or not. The lot may have not fallen out so that Judah inherited Hebron, okay, originally. Therefore, Caleb says, hey, God said this, but the lot fell out like this. Let me prove whether or not I'm willing to go up at 85 years old and fight these guys. And if it becomes mine, then it's mine. And if I lose, then it wasn't meant to be. That sounds like it's probably what it's talking about here in 14. So, of course, Caleb does go up, and he does fight against the Anakim, which was a giant people that lived in this area, and he wins. He wins the mountain. Okay, he takes it. So 14:4 goes on to say, Hebron therefore became the inheritance of Caleb the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, unto this day, because he had wholly followed Yahweh God of Israel. And the name of Hebron before was called Kirjath Arba, which Arba was a great man among the Anakims, and the land had rest from war. So we're told here that Arba, who was a giant, a leader of these Anakim people, was subdued, and it used to be called Kirjath Arba, but now it's called Hebron, and Caleb took it and made it part of Judah's inheritance. Okay, so I'm going to read part of 15 here. It says, this then was the lot of the tribe of the children of Judah by their families, even to the border of Edom. The wilderness of Zin southward was the uttermost part of the south coast. Their south border was from the shore of the Salt Sea, from the bay that looks southward, and it went out to the south side to Mela Kerabim, okay, and passed along to Zin, and ascended up on the south side to Kadesh Barnea, and passed along Hezron, and went up to Adar, and fetched a compass to Karka, I think is how you would probably say that. And so he's now going to describe the place in which I said we weren't going to get into, because it just continues to go like this, and this is something I think a person can sit down and read about and look at a map and get a much better understanding without me talking about it and using the time here for that. Okay, so for anybody here at the Bible study, in our local get-together, we can sit down and look at it together, but I'm not going to do that for recording's sake right now. Okay, but I do want to jump down and look at 15:13. It says, Caleb the son of Jephunneh, he gave a part among the children of Judah according to the commandment of Yahweh to Joshua, even the city of Arba, the father of Anak, which city is Hebron. Caleb drove thence the three sons of Anak, Shishai, Ahiman, Talmai, and the children of Anak, and he went up thence to the inhabitants of Debir, and the name of Debir before was Kirjath Sepher. And Caleb said, he that smites Kirjath Sepher and takes it, to him I will give Aksah, my daughter, to wife. And Othniel, who was the son of Kenaz, the brother of Caleb, took it, and he gave him Aksah, his daughter, to wife. It came to pass that as she came unto him, that she moved him to ask her father a field, and she lighted off her ass. And Caleb said unto her, what wouldest thou? Who answered, give me a blessing, for thou hast given me a southland, give me also a spring of water. And he gave her the upper springs and the nether spring. This is the inheritance of the tribe of the children of Judah, according to their families. Okay, now I want to make a point here about Aksah. Okay, before she's even had children yet with Caleb's kinsman, her kinsman in effect, which is pretty common in biblical understanding. We'll talk about that in just a minute. She's thinking about her family. She wants a spring of water to flocks and herds and things like that. And so she petitions her father for a piece of land that is going to, in effect, be given now to Othniel, son of Kenaz. Okay, now, Caleb is son of Jephunneh. All right, we know that. Jephunneh is a descendant from Kenaz. So these people, whenever we read about brother and sister and things like that, we're talking about kinsmen. We're talking about kinsmen and kinswomen, brother and sister from that standpoint. Okay, Aksa, for instance, the daughter of Caleb, would have most likely been a cousin or a second cousin to Jephunneh. I'm sorry, to Othniel. And Othniel would have had no problem with this, just like, and quite honestly, before the Civil War, it was way more common to see in the United States cousins marrying each other, even first cousins and second cousins. That was way more common in most countries. It still happens in a lot of countries in the world that are not of European origin, but in European countries it was common. Okay, it's always been a taboo and a stigma, and it's against God's law to marry someone who is too close. Okay, and I'm just mentioning this for remembrance sake. However, what needs to be seen here is that some of Caleb's land that he just freshly conquered is now going to be given as an inheritance to his daughter. But through his daughter, it is going to be given, in effect, to Othniel and Othniel's sons. All right. And because they are related through a common ancestor called Kenaz, that's why Caleb is called a Kenazite. Okay, Kenaz, in effect, is getting the inheritance. Okay, so it's taking it from one branch of Kenaz's family and it's giving it to Othniel from Caleb because of the marriage tie. So we can see an understanding of biblical inheritance, lawful inheritance, really, in the case of Aksa, Caleb, and Othniel. Okay? I think that's a good thing to pull out of this verse before we move on. But the thing that also I want to stress, as I started with, is that this mindset of family ties is really getting lost in our culture right now, in American, European culture, Christian culture. And one of the reasons is because we have taken the approach I had mentioned at the beginning of this message, that anybody can be an Israelite at any time, and that spiritual Israel is God's standard, and that blood relationship, what we refer to as blood, which I like to refer to as descent, because the word blood, like we use it, is a Greek understanding more than or a Persian understanding too, more than it is a biblical one. Biblical understandings deal with flesh and bone. Why? Because a person looks like their father. They are kind after kind. Okay, does the blood have something to do with that? Maybe from a genetic standpoint, but we have to remember the Bible is a biblically realistic book. It is a realistic book, an organic book that deals with organic principles. The organic principle is when you lose the abstract understanding of scientific genetics, okay, the things that we think we know by translating information that is given to us via microscopes and via mathematics, through science, when we can't understand that anymore due to lack of technology, what we still know is that that guy looks like his dad. All right? He is in the image and likeness of his father and mother. All right? We understand genetics straightforward from that way. Well, in the Bible, it does not talk about blood nearly as much as it talks about flesh and bone. Okay? Because that are indicators of ethnic, racial, genetic inheritance. Okay, a person looks like who they are descended from. And I think most of us understand that. However, with this new spiritual Israel idea, when I say new, I mean new as the last 150, 200 years that's being imposed upon the church. And I'm sure its roots go way deeper than that into some pagan origin. But what it does not do is come out of the Bible. It is imposed upon the Bible from a non-realistic understanding of Israel and who they are and how you can become an Israelite. In this case, Aksa is like a champion for the people of Kenaz, for her own people, for her descendants. She is worried about the children she has not had. Faith, that is faith, substance of things hoped for, evidence of things not seen. The sons of Othniel, which will be her people. She wants them to have a good piece of land to water their flocks and herds on, to have an upper and nether millstone. She wants to have something to give her family, her children. She's thinking future-minded about her kids. All right? And the children of Othniel, which are hers. There was no division. There was no feminism. There was no, this is my inheritance, that's your inheritance. This was a joint effort to advance their people. Okay? Their people won the mountain by blood. Their land was given to them by God, they believed. God was proved by them winning the battle. And now they should hold on to it with their life. They're bound to the land. Their blood has become part of the land. Their people will be buried in the land. It will be their inheritance. It was given by God. Okay, that is a root understanding, a common root understanding of a biblical principle that is woven throughout the scriptures that we have lost as Christians. Okay? And it's sad. Because as Christians, regardless of if you know you are an Israelite or not, as a European Christian, a white-faced Christian, which European we all know here, white-faced Christian, it means European. European means white face in the Hebrew. And that's what we call ourselves. So, whether we know where we come from or not, we don't care about our children. We don't care about the future. And a lot of times, if you don't care about the past, you don't care about the future. So, it's a sad situation that we have in our country today and in our faith and our churches. Our churches have taught us a doctrine. I shouldn't even say our, because I don't take credit for them. But the churches have taught us a doctrine that has destroyed our children. Because they don't think there's anything important about who they are and where they've come from. It's a sad, sad state of affairs that you will not find in any biblical book. These people cared about who they came from. They cared about where they were going. They cared about what blood was in their veins from the way we think about it, what genetic material they possessed, who they were come from, and whose loins they came out of, and how they achieved what it was that God promised their people. Okay? It's just that, it really is that simple of a principle that the Bible talks about. So, consider that as we read on. I'm going to move to 18. As I said, I'm going to skip over 16 and 17 because of the redundancy of it's just talking about places. And some of this is still going to talk about it, but there's some more principles in here that I want to focus on. Joshua 18:1, it says, "The whole congregation of the children of Israel assembled together at Shiloh, and they set up the tabernacle of the congregation there. And the land was subdued before them." So this means at this time this is written, Israel had the primacy. Okay? They had control of the land. They had not done everything, but they had the primacy. They were the supreme people of the land. They conquered it. Okay? The people were now under them. 18:2 says, "There remained among the children of Israel 7 tribes which had not yet received their inheritance." So there's 12 tribes. They gain primacy over the land, right, with not even half of the tribes conquering with them. Which goes to show you the power and the fervency the people were fighting with in the hand of God working with them. 3 says, "Joshua said to the children of Israel, 'How long are you slack to go possess the land which Yahweh, God of your fathers, has given you? Give out from among you 3 men for each tribe. I will send them, and they shall rise and go through the land and describe it according to the inheritance of them.'" This is called surveying. "And they shall come again to me. And they shall divide it into 7 parts. Judah shall abide in their coast on the south. The house of Joseph shall abide in the coast on the north. You shall therefore describe the land into seven parts, and bring the description hither to me, and I may cast lots for you here before Yahweh our God. But the Levites have no part among you, for the priesthood of Yahweh is their inheritance. And Gad and Reuben, the half-tribe of Manasseh, have received their inheritance beyond Jordan on the east, which Moses, the servant of Yahweh, gave them. And the men arose, and they went away, and Joshua charged them that went to describe the land, saying, Go and walk through the land, and describe it, and come again to me, that I may here cast lots for you before Yahweh in Shiloh. Okay, so what is happening here is called surveying. Okay, this is something that is, in a way, way more common among, once again, Western or European peoples than anyone else in the world. Okay, these people are going out ahead of time, just like George Washington did to the Ohio Territory when he was a surveyor. They went out and surveyed the land ahead of time. They divided it into portions, okay, and then brought it back and cast lots. And when they cast lots for it, they assigned it, they're going to assign it to a tribe before Yahweh in Shiloh, where the tabernacle was. Okay, they wanted to be close to Yahweh while they made these decisions. Now, why'd they do this? Because the people's hands were slacked. They did not feel the pressing need to go and conquer. They were living in four tribes' inheritance. 12 tribes were living in four tribes' inheritance because they had not yet been able to go out and get it. So Joshua says, okay, I need to motivate you, basically. All right? And his motivation is sending out people to survey the land and saying, here is your land, this is yours, you know, name your tribe Issachar, Dan, Naphtali. Go and conquer it. It's yours. This section here, this map, you know, this lot is yours from this place to this place to this place to this place. This is your job to conquer. It is yours. Okay? And because it was theirs, they had a responsibility to what they were to do. There was no more question as to how they should proceed, and it made the people want land. They wanted now to fulfill the commandment because they knew what they were fighting for. All right? It's an idea of motivation, really. It's a motivational idea. And there's a principle to be gained from this, from considering these things. And that is, if your children or my children do not know what is theirs, they will not know how to fight for it. If there are no borders in a land, they do not know that that land is theirs. If there is no way to say this is their land because it's from their fathers, or it was given by God, or it was their destiny, or whatever you want to call it, if they don't have that understanding, they are unable to mentally associate, you could call it, their responsibility to the land that was given to them ahead of time. Faith. Okay, the faith, the belief, the trust that that is their land, and not only their land to get, but it is their land to maintain, is not associated into their mind. So Joshua motivates the people in this way. Very important, I think, for understanding tribal inheritance once again. So it says in 10, it says, Joshua cast lots for them in Shiloh before Yahweh, and there Joshua divided the land unto the children of Israel according to their divisions. And the lot of the tribe of the children of Benjamin came up according to their families. And the coast of their lot came forth between the children of Judah and the children of Joseph. So now it's dividing this up. And their borders of the north side was from Jordan. Their borders went up to the south of Jericho. On the north side they went up through the mountains eastward, and so on and so forth. So it's now describing in the book of Joshua once again where these different tribes have been given their land according to Yahweh's dictates through the lot by the hand of Joshua at Shiloh. Okay, and it goes on to talk about this until Joshua 20, which is where we're going to go to next. So turn with me to 20. Yahweh spake also to Joshua, saying, Speak to the children of Israel, saying, Appoint out for you cities of refuge, whereof I spake unto you by the hand of Moses, that the slayer that kills any person unawares and unwillingly may flee thither, and they shall be your refuge from the avenger of blood. And when he that doth flee unto one of those cities shall stand at the entering of the gate of the city, and shall declare his cause in the ears of the elders of the city, they shall take him into the city unto them, and give him a place that he may dwell among them. And if the avenger of blood pursue after him, and they shall not deliver the slayer up into the hands, because he smote his neighbor unwittingly, and hated him not before time, he shall dwell in that city, and he shall stand before the congregation for judgment, and unto the death of the high priest that shall be in those days. Then shall the slayer return and come to his own city, and unto his own house, unto the city from whence he fled. And they appointed Kadesh in Galilee, in Mount Naphtali, Shechem, which we know that from the story of Dinah, from the place of burial for some of the Israelites as well, of the patriarch period, in Mount Ephraim. Kirjath Arba, which is Hebron, in the mountain of Judah. Okay, so in these places, and there's also some others named after that, I'll read them after I'm done describing some stuff. We're now having these cities of refuge, which I mentioned at the beginning of our reading here, being reminded now that the tribes had been given their lot inheritance. Okay, so when we read prior in 18 that the lot was drawn for these tribes, there's your land, go conquer it. Yahweh says to Joshua, make sure that you remind these people to make the cities of refuge. Okay, now there's an important function of the cities of refuge that people don't often catch. And that is that the cities of refuge, from this point to that point, actually establish the roadway system of Israel. It is the law upon which the road law sits, the domain of the roads, or the easement, or right of way, we call it in American law. Okay, in this case, to get to the city of refuge, for a person to get from his particular tribal inheritance that divided him from his neighbor, there had to be a road leading to the city of refuge so that this man can pursue. God, or not be not pursued, if he were to kill a man unwittingly. Now, once again, quick explanation of this. This means you accidentally slayed someone, killed a person accidentally, as if you were out cutting wood with a person and your axe head flew off and hit him in the head. The reason for this is because God winks, so to speak, at the idea of the avenger of blood. In other words, a man's brother who's angry that so-and-so killed his brother may slay you for his brother's blood, according to Genesis, by the blood of, you know, blood of man shall blood shall be shed for man's blood, and so on and so forth, which is mentioned right at the time of Noah. Okay, in other words, when a man kills a person and sheds his blood, the person who shed his blood is allowed to be killed. Okay, so God winks at it, even in the case of unwitting death. However, God appoints a place for a man to flee called cities of refuge. These are kind of like prison cities. They're places where you have to stay within the gates of the city. They will protect you. Okay, you can leave if you want, but if you get killed, that's on you. But these cities of refuge are places to protect an unwitting slayer of his brother or his neighbor that may be being tracked down by a relative, all right, to execute the law as he saw fit. So this reasoning, this mercy, this grace, is the actual foundation of the roadway system in Israel. I think that's very important, because oftentimes
those of us who have studied law ask these kinds of questions, even in man's law, American law, Roman law, whatever, and common law. When we consider these things, we ask the question, why are roads, why is there land taken from one person to the other? What is eminent domain and things like that? In this case, eminent domain is allowed for this case. But the concept is entirely different in a biblical situation. It's not eminent domain in the idea of taking it from an inhabitant who already lives there to give it for the reason. It is ingrained as a foundational point upon which the road system is to be based. Okay? It was there for the purpose of getting to the cities of refuge, which were also places where the Levites would live. Okay? They were the congregation being spoken of in 20 verse 6, where it says, "He shall stand before the congregation for judgment until the death of the high priest will be in those days." In other words, they kind of maintain this person's actions and judge him while he lives there protected, but at the death of the high priest, interestingly enough, this person was allowed to leave and go back to his own home, his own land. So, important part of law also that should be considered in this part of Joshua and in the ideas of biblical inheritance, things which I hope that in the generations to come will be reinstituted in the world in some capacity or another when the kingdom is brought to earth. Okay, so it says in 7, they appointed Kadesh and Galilee, I'm sorry, I already read that. 8, on the other side, Jordan by Jericho, eastward, they assign Bezer in the wilderness upon the plain out of the tribe of Reuben, and Ramoth and Gilead out of the tribe of Gad, Golan and Bashan out of the tribe of Manasseh. These were the cities appointed for all the children of Israel, for the stranger that sojourneth among them, that whosoever killeth any person at unawares might flee thither and not die by the hand of the avenger of blood until he stood before the congregation. Okay, now there's also something here mentioned in 20 verse 9. It says, these are the cities appointed for all the children of Israel and for the stranger that sojourns among them, that whosoever kills any person unaware might flee thither and not die by the hand of the avenger of blood until he stood before the congregation. So here's an example of where the stranger, who is not one of the children of Israel, is able to utilize the city of refuge when he lives in Israel, because it's going to be the closest point for him to run to for asylum, so to speak, from whoever's going to try to kill him. And in the case of being a stranger, not a native-born person who may not speak the language fluently or whose customs are questionable or whatever, you're way more likely to have a prejudice cast upon you in a foreign land. So Yahweh makes sure to say that whoever's traveling or sojourning among you, and this would also apply to Israelite strangers, people from one tribe who's sojourning in another tribe. I don't think it's exclusively in this mentioning. But at the same time, whoever you might be has the ability to run away to these cities, no matter who you were, native or homeborn. And there's an example of how the law of God deals with strangers and native-born alike. Okay? In other words, Yahweh doesn't make a law that says all Israelites can run to a city of refuge if they accidentally kill somebody. That's called manslaughter, manslaying. Okay? But are not murderers. But on the other hand, you know, foreigners are just stuck. You're going to get killed by the avenger of blood. So Yahweh does not create a system like that. It is balanced, and it says what is for one is for the other. If they are knowledgeable enough to know Israelite law, to know they can run to the city of refuge and get there, they can present their case before the congregation of that city of refuge, and they will either be delivered from the slayer of blood or the avenger of blood, or they will be given back into the hand of the avenger of blood and let him do with them as he will if it's determined that the person was a murderer and not a manslayer. So very important stuff here. I hope that this particular message finds a place among your Bible studies, because for me, inheritance laws are very important. And I'm gonna end here
with a comment outside of the book of Joshua as to why this is important. We read prior in the book of Deuteronomy in chapter 33 in some of the Sabbath Bible study not too very long ago, last month, about a blessing in Deuteronomy 33 that Moses gave to the children of Israel before he died. Now, I want you to pay attention to this, because when we talk about tribal inheritance, we are also talking about Israelite inheritance. We are talking about the division of land, but we're talking also about something much more important. It is the only part of Israelite inheritance that Europeans have today to prove who they are, other than some of the other blessings God has put upon us. Okay, so Deuteronomy 33:1, it's right before where some of the blessings are given to the tribes, okay, which once again is a inheritance thing. These blessings are inherited by the tribes. So I want to kind of explain this some. It says, this is the blessing wherewith Moses, the man of God, blessed the children of Israel before his death. He said, Yahweh came from Sinai, okay, place of the Ten Commandments, rose up from Seir, Mount of Esau, unto them. He shined forth from Mount Paran. He came with 10,000 of saints. From his right hand, okay, went a fiery law for them. He's talking about Yahweh. He loved the people. All his saints are in thy hand. They sat down at thy feet, every one shall receive of thy words. Moses commanded us a law, even the inheritance of the congregation of Jacob. He was king in Jeshurun when the heads of the people and the tribes of Israel were gathered together. And then he says, let Reuben live. And he goes on to bless Reuben and Judah and Levi. And he goes on and speaks of the people tribally. But what he sets out to say about this inheritance, which is so important, because it's the primary inheritance which inheritance is set upon. It is the functionary law that you use when you divide inheritance, that tells you how to divide the inheritance, and that is the law of God. The law of God, the fiery law of God, is the inheritance of Israel. It is the inheritance of God's saints. The Bible, which contains the law of God, the prophets, which is the fulfillment of the law of God in its way it interacts with the people, the histories of Israel, okay, which shows us the examples of how the law of God was either listened to or broken, all right, the poetry, which is the singings about the law of God, the ways of God, the songs and poems that great men wrote about Yahweh and the law in the world. And as well, you can take it on and talk about the Gospels and the Epistles, which show us the greater enlightenment of the law of God as Israel started to become dispersed, and how they were more in need of a Savior, and how the new covenant was to work in our lives and in our hearts through the example of Christ our Lord. Okay, so who was the Word of God made flesh, as we've talked about many times. So he was the law of God made flesh, in effect. That's a very important part of it. Christ is the inheritance. By looking through this, Christ is the inheritance, just as the Bible is the inheritance of Israel. It was the promise given to Abraham. It's the promise given to our children. It's the promises given to us. It is what will cause us to be victorious at some point and bring about the kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. Okay? It is a very, very important part of tribal inheritance, more important than the land itself over in Israel, the land we know to be the place of Israel, the place that millions of people have fought and died for, including many European armies, such as the British and the French. Okay? And the crusaders that went over to take it, albeit in the name of the wrong faith, Catholic faith, but nevertheless in the name of the book. Okay? We're bound to our inheritance as European Israelites. Okay? We carry the Bible. We've printed the Bible. It is our book. It's our inheritance. So when we want to understand the placement of God, when we want to understand the reasons for why God wants us to understand this stuff, we first have to look to the law of God and seat everything in its proper order, just as Joshua did.